Hello and welcome. My name is Luke Burridge, and this is the Science Fiction Book Review Podcast. It's the show where I review every science fiction book that I read as I read it. If you want to know more information about me or about the podcast or anything else, just go to sfbrp.com or just go to your iTunes and check out the very first episode of this podcast, SFBRP. Episode number one, that's the way to do it. Now, of course, I say this is where I review every science fiction book that I read. The thing is, I'm not actually reading so many science fiction books recently, so I'm sort of spreading the reviews out a bit. Normally, I would read maybe a book a week or probably more than that, but at the moment, just because I've got other things and other projects on the go, I've not been reading quite so much. And, of course, I've been doing things with my girlfriend. Nothing bad, you know, nothing inappropriate to talk about here. I've been watching some DVDs, which I've never really got into science fiction on TV, but there's been some DVD box sets that we've been working through recently, but I'm not going to be reviewing them. Instead, I'm going to be reviewing this week a book by Robert A. Heinlein and Spider Robinson called Variable Star. And the story, there's a story behind the story, let me put it that way. Back in the 1950s, I think 1954, 1955, Robert A. Heinlein, he was writing his juvenile novels at the time, which were published for younger readers, and he wrote up some notes, some 8 pages of tightly spaced notes, and then he never actually made them into a novel. He wrote other novels, similar novels of the same kind of themes that I've noticed as well. But it was never written up into a book, and years later, Heinlein died. These notes were found, 7 of the 8 pages of notes were found anyway. And Spider Robinson, long story, it's mentioned in the back of the novel itself, probably online too. I'm sure you could find the details online. But Spider Robinson was asked to write up the notes into a full-length novel itself. And of course, he had 7 pages of 8 pages of notes to go on, and the resulting book is called A Variable Star, co-written in a way between the two of them, although Robert A. Heinlein died quite a while ago, so I guess this is going to be his last book contribution. In this review, actually, because it is very much like a Heinlein book, I'd love to, you know, I will be comparing it both to Heinlein books and just as a standalone novel. I have never actually read any other of Spider Robinson's books that I remember. I probably have read one or two of his books, but, you know, I didn't recognise anything in the book which sort of brought back anything from Spider Robinson's books. But there's a lot in this book which brings back other Heinlein novels. So, to the universe, the world that this book is set in. First of all, I thought it was set in sort of like the sort of Heinlein future history, or whatever he called his future history book. I don't know what his name for it was. Maybe it is future history. I don't know. But first I thought it was in there, but the events in the book show that it's not set in any of Heinlein's universes. It's set in this universe that we're in now, but in the future. Very strange way to look at it, but it's definitely the first post-Iraq war, latest Iraq war, like, occupation novel that I've read. I've read lots of books that reference, like, 9/11 and other events back in 2001, but it's not just, like, it doesn't just reference them, it really does play well on the themes. I'll get a lot into that later on in the book, or later on in the review. And actually, you get into that more later on in the book. It's not so much there at the beginning. It starts off, like, looking at different things. So there's a war in our future now, I'm talking about in the book. There's a war, Iraq war, and then religious fundamentalists and the prophets take over. Again, ideas that were in Heinlein's book, but taken a little different angle on this way. And then all technological progress stops, and, like, there's a new Dark Ages in a way. And finally, hundreds of years in the future, the prophets are overthrown and civilization returns, and technological progress starts over again, and they're sort of crawling their way back up. And there's lots of this, you know, oh, if this hadn't been done, you know, if it hadn't been for these Dark Ages, we'd have been here by now. And oh, if it hadn't been for this, we'd have been here by now. And that's actually what I hear a lot about these modern, in the past few hundred years, there's been lots and lots of people say that about the Roman Empire, and especially the Catholic Church. They say if it hadn't been for the Catholic Church, and we'd have built upon the science of the Greeks and the science of the Babylonians and all these other sciences from China and India and stuff like that, if it hadn't been for the Catholic Church, we'd have been on the moon 1,000 years earlier. That's sort of the kind of situation we're in this book, and maybe in now, I'm not sure. So This means that actually we can play around with it, and you can see that Spider Robinson is playing around with this, because Heinlein was always writing in the 50s, and so the social side of things in the 1950s in America are very sort of like different from they are now. But then, because Spider Robinson has taken this into the future, made a sort of civilization regress back a long way, and then is going forward again, you can get that same kind of era, that 1950s era, coming out in the book quite a lot. And I really like that kind of device that is used there. Like people in the first few chapters, the characters talking to each other, calling themselves dear and love, and talking about, oh, we're together now, we've got to get married, and, you know, all the sort of 1950s themes of building a life together even though you don't have a lot of money, all that kind of stuff comes out early on in the book, and I quite like that. Also there's some good sort of like added popular culture references in the book, especially at the beginning of it. At the start, the hero of the book, Joel, he googled something, and I like that reference. I don't think I've seen people googling something in a science fiction book. And there's even references to other things, like one of the characters that you meet is named after the Simpsons. And when I was first reading it, I thought, it can't be just a coincidence that it's got the same name as someone from the Simpsons. And of course it isn't, and I sort of giggled at that because I thought it was quite funny. I'm not sure how appropriate it is, but you know, maybe Heinlein was putting in cultural references from the 1950s in his book, and I just don't get them now because they're way out of date for me. So two key technologies that have been developed in the future. Of course, there's flying cars and all that kind of stuff, but you expect it really in science fiction. But there's the two key ones are star travel, and this uses a special kind of a drive which relies on quantum thingamajigs, which I can't really remember how it all went. But to keep this running, you have to have what's known as a relativist, and this is someone who can sort of key themselves into this, into the quantum insides of this star drive, and as long as they keep recognizing the quantumness of it, as long as there's an observer or something like that, it keeps going, and sort of you have to have these people on board. The relativists are actually people, and they power the starship in a way. And there's another thing that you have in this book as well, which is the communication over long distances at faster than light speed, instantaneous over long, long distances, and that's the whole telepathy between twins, which is brings in the whole sort of twin paradox from, you know, all the Einstein and sort of like relativity and all that kind of stuff gets played with very well in this book too. Very, very similar to Time Enough for the Stars by Heinlein, and I think that book was written around about the same time as this. The notes for this book was written up, so maybe that's why Heinlein didn't finish this version, because there's so many similar ideas in another book of the same era. I'm actually identical twin myself, and I tell you this, there's no such thing as telepathy between identical twins. I can see why people think it, because there's lots of things that me and my twin have in common, and we can meet up after, you know, after 6 months of not seeing each other, and we arrive and we're wearing exactly the same clothes and exactly the same, but then maybe that's just because we remember the times when things happen at the same time, and of course all the stuff that doesn't happen at the same time we discount. But anyway, let's get on to the story. I was going to say something about... Oh, yes, these two technologies. The thing I really like about these two technologies that Spider Robinson and Heinlein have written in here is that they're both very much reliant on humans, on people. The technology, normally it's just a radio, something tucked away behind a black box or in an engine room or something like that. But in this book, the technology that's used is very human. They have human faces, and I like that. So the story itself is Joel Johnson. He's our sort of young hero. He's the son of a physicist, and this physicist invented this quantum star drive that I was just talking about before. And Joel Johnson also has a history as a farmer. I think he worked on Europa, again, a like nice Heinlein touch there. And he's a student and a musician. And I reviewed The Door into Summer a while back, and this has a similar setup at the beginning, because he finds out a secret about his girlfriend, and he doesn't know what to do, and he wants to leave his girlfriend, so he gets really drunk, and when he's drunk, he signs himself up to an adventure to take him pretty much as far away from his girlfriend as he possibly can. And in The Door into Summer, the hero, I think it's Dan, he escapes into the future, and this time Joel, he gets on a starship, as what he managed to do, because there's not many space farmers signing up to be on a starship, and because he's a space farmer, he managed to get on board that way. And he goes off on this spaceship, and it's going to take 20 years to get to this planet, miles and miles away. Well, I say miles away, light years away, and they're going to colonize the planet. And in a way, he's going to the future, because, of course, the time dilation twin paradox kind of thing going on there. So the large part of the book, the large chunk of the book in the middle, tells the story of life on board the ship. Up until that point, the story is really racing along and you're really getting into it, and it follows very closely Joel and his things. And when you get onto the ship, you get to know a lot more of the crew. The story sort of slows down a bit for a sort of quarter of the book in the middle, and you find out about the technology and what needs doing, and people just going around about their business. And this is something I really like about the book, is that people, you know, in the Heinlein tradition, they're just doing their jobs, and they're doing their jobs well, and it's interesting to know what's happening. When everything's going well, when there's no drama, when, you know, it's all going well, and you're just looking at it, and you're finding out about it, I really enjoy that kind of, you know, world-building that just goes on there. And of course, you find out, you know, all the things that people get up to when they're not working on the ship, and this is quite interesting, because they're talking and playing music and eating and, of course, having lots of sex, which another hangover. Of course, this book was based on a juvenile story outline, but the sex and the drugs and the rock and roll has really been injected back into it by Spider Robinson, and I quite like that in a way. The story sort of really does, like I say, slows down, but then, you know, when disaster strikes, because you've got to know the characters and you know what the jobs they do and you know how the ship's laid out and you know everything like that, and he's really put the time into building the world on this ship miles away from anywhere, light years away from anywhere, going between the stars. When disaster strikes, you know, you really feel for the ship and the characters on board. And, of course, when disaster strikes, it, like, really strikes it. You know, there's one thing that goes wrong, and then another thing goes wrong, and then something really goes wrong, and it caught me out. I really didn't see this coming. Of course, I'm not going to go into it, because it would be a large spoiler in the book. But you'll see it when you get to it. And this is really comes back to the theme of it being a post-Iraq war book, because it's the reactions of the crew that really brings this theme into the foreground. There's lots of other themes going on, but this is the one I want to concentrate now. It is a bit blatant, because, you know, the Spider-Robinson, the author, he really sort of puts his words, or somebody's words, into the characters' mouths, and he preaches a bit towards the end. But, again, it's hard to go into this without spoiling what happens. But you can look at it both ways. For example, I was comparing the Fallen Dragon by Peter F. Hamilton. I was comparing that to the Iraq War and the sort of the insurgency there that I was talking about. But, you know, the whole, you know, that was, of course, written way before the Iraq War, but you can find out. But this is directly a response to 9/11 and the Iraq War. It's like, is, you know, if someone attacks you without provocation, you don't even know this this enemy exists, and the attack is far more deadly than you can, like, you had ever originally thought possible. You know, do you immediately want revenge and, you know, casting around for ways to get back at them? And those kind of ideas are really hashed over quite well in the book. They go into a lot of depth there. But then on the flip side of that, if you're a terrorist organization, what can you do to hurt an enemy which has overwhelming military control? You know, they've got all the guns, they've got all the bombs, they've got all the battleships and stuff like that, and what have you got? How can you hurt them in return? And is it your duty to hurt them in return, or is it your duty to hurt them in the first place? And again, this has gone into as well, because in the final parts of the book, or the sort of like the final but one part of the book, let me put it that way, you get into a lot of this, and I can't explain it, because of course it's be a big spoiler, but these themes are dealt best because you see things from both sides in the 9/11 and Iraq War, all that kind of situation. You're on, even though there's one set of characters that it's working with in the book, you're seeing things from both sides, and that I really liked. And the ending of the book, suddenly there's this hopeless situation and a discovery is made and everything's put back on track. And this is the thing that really annoyed me, because it was so much of a cop-out. And again, it does compare to some other Heinlein books. But in other Heinlein books, sort of like the cop-out ending, I was like, yeah, okay, it's a juvenile book. I want everything to happen. You know, it, like, there's, you know, the lovers get back together again, and, you know, everyone lives happily ever after. I quite like that in the juveniles, because you want that, because it's for a younger audience, and I want that too. But the style and the themes of this book, I really didn't want it to end that way. I don't want to go on too long about this. First, you know, some things that I like about it. Again, first of all, the character the Heinlein characters and books and stories that are referenced, and like the history and aliens that are referenced in this book, I enjoyed recognizing them because I've not read all Heinlein's books, but I've read quite a lot of them. If you don't recognize them though, I really don't think it will spoil the story at all. It's just like any historical reference that you don't get immediately. You don't have to understand them to enjoy the book. Another thing is that I like it that it reads like a Heinlein juvenile novel for so much of it, especially in the chapters near the start. It's like straight out of like the Have Spacesuit Will Travel book, because, you know, each chapter the character gets into a situation and then uses his intellect and wit and, you know, sometimes a bit of luck to get around it or defeat the problem. And then that leads him in to sort of further and further into the adventure. And then the next chapter, you know, or the end of that chapter, sets up the next situation that he finds himself in, you know, a bigger problem to get over and to use his skills to get out of. And I really like that. And there's morals in there, and it takes him out of his comfort zone. It takes him on a journey. And that's good. I really enjoy that kind of stuff. And you can really see Heinlein's hand in there. And finally, I really like that Spider Robinson really has a big hand in this, because the hero is not an engineer. It's not someone who's got an engineering background who wants to be an engineer in the future. It's a musician. And I think Spider Robinson really like writes music and the dance and the art and the poetry and everything in the book. I think he writes it really well. Some of the best sort of like views of science fiction from an artist's point of view that I've read. And I guess that maybe comes from being a musician and a professional musician, or sometime professional musician myself and an artist myself. And so, yeah, a lot of other things I enjoyed about the book, but I want to move quickly on to the complaints before the end of this review. First of all, big complaint, I don't mind, you know, on a spaceship you can have casual sex and you can have homosexual affairs, no problem with any of that. I do, though, have problems with, like, inappropriate sexual encounters or encounters between older men and young girls, because, you know, back in the 1950s and 60s or whenever, you know, Heinlein was writing Stranger in a Strange Land and some of his other science fiction, but, you know, yeah, you want to sort of, like, delve into that, well, not delve into that, but, you know, get to see what's going on there and explore those things. But, you know, it's decades since that, and, like, again, I'm no prude, but I really find relationships between 7-year-olds and 20-year-olds just a little bit wrong. You know, even if they're just like pen pals, even if it's just one of those relationships, I just find it a little bit unnerving. Private relationships, even non-sexual relationships, but private relationships between such a wide age gap. And it's always in the Heinlein books, it's always the younger girl and the older man. It's not such a huge problem in this book as it is in some Heinlein books, but I just think the book would have been better off without it. Also, on that same theme, sort of like the unnerving kind of finding it a bit freaky theme, when Heinlein, he names a lot of his romantic characters, female romantic characters, after his wife, and that's kind of sweet. But when Spider Robinson also names the female love interests in this book after Heinlein's wife, I just think it's a bit freaky. But then again, I guess it was maybe the character names were set out by Heinlein in the notes for the book, in the outline for the book, and it wasn't Spider Robinson. Or maybe Spider Robinson's wife has the same name as Heinlein's wife, but I think that's quite unlikely. The final thing that I really want to go into that I really disliked about this book, I mean, up until the last few pages, this was a 5-star book for me. I was enjoying it so much. There was so much in this that I could get my head around, and really enjoying the themes and the ideas and the gadgets and everything there as well. Really cool. And then, like, I just, like, in the last 2 chapters or last chapter, so, like, things happen, and it just annoys me. Like, this technology just turns up, and it's like, ta-da, here we are, going to sort everything out, and happy ending, boom. And I just hate it, because, actually, I'll just break it down for you really in a way. I just wrote this note down here. I don't mind any kind of a technology, miraculous, advanced, indistinguishable from magic, everything like that. Just stick it in the book, but as long as it's there in the first, at least the first quarter, third half of the book, I don't mind. I can go with anything. Flying cars, you know, even the things in this book with the sort of like the telepathy and the faster-than-light space travel. No problem. I'll go with it. And then, you know, you use this. The authors will normally, like, use these ideas, see these changes in reality, and weave a story, you know, and take the characters on in that universe on from there. But it happens time and time again that in the last few chapters, some new technology is suddenly introduced from nowhere. And you don't see it developed, and you don't see it coming at all, and the science behind it isn't explained earlier on. And there's not even a hint of it earlier on in the book. Maybe the slightest hint of it early in the book, but it's like, you know, the author got to the end and then gone back and put these hints in beforehand. And this sort of introduction of unbelievable technology doesn't only happen once in this book, it happens twice. The first time it happens, I let it pass. No problem at all, because the result is worth it. But the second time, when it happens right at the very end, I was almost angry, because, you know, in my mind, like I say, it had been a fantastic book up until then, but then, you know, it happens at the end, and everything gets wrapped up, and it just seemed lazy. And again, I'm not sure how much this was Heinlein's idea, because, like, the last page was missing from his notes, and how much it was Spider Robinson. I don't know where we cross over from Heinlein Robinson territory into just Spider Robinson territory, but the ending really left me feeling betrayed in a way, because I'd had so much faith in the book, but then it seemed almost just for the happy ending and just for the hopeful future kind of yay ending, and this was introduced as some idea that seemed to be just taken from another Heinlein book, just brought in there, and I just didn't like it up until that point. Like I say, even the really bad stuff, you know, I was enjoying it so much, it had 5 stars, that even the bad stuff was hitting me so hard. I really enjoyed it, and I really saw how the characters coped with it, or didn't cope with it, and fell apart. I thought it was really good writing, and then the last point sort of left me a bit disappointed. So I've got to knock at least a full star off my rating, and just give this book 4 out of 5 stars, which means still read it. And definitely read it up until the last few chapters, and then sort of, you know, put your hand half over your eyes and read it through the rest through sort of like gritted teeth, and yeah. But do read it. It is very, very worth it. And it's, of course, it'll be the last kind of Robert A. Heinlein science fiction book you'll get. And then also one of his very early ones as well, because it's from 1950s originally. And I guess I will see if I can find some other Spider Robinson books, because I really did enjoy a lot of this book, and I want to get more into some of his books, because he's one of those sort of like untapped authors. I'm sure he's got loads more books out there. So 4 out of 5 stars, read it. Next time, I'm going to review a book, which again I've already read, and I'll be reviewing that soon, although I said that last time and it's been 2 weeks instead of 2 days. But I will review this book soon and put it up online. It's called... Oh, one second. I have the book over there. It's called The Peace War by Werner Winger. And, hey, this is a book, like I was saying before, this is a book that gets it right. Technology introduced at the beginning, or ideas of technology introduced at the beginning, and that's enough for him to write a good story round all the way through into the end. Again, I was a big fan of Werner Winger's. Any book that I've read so far of his I've really enjoyed. This is no different. So get The Peace War, or Peace War, whatever it's called, read it, and then join me next time when I... do my review. So that's it from me. Email me, luke@juggler.net. I do listen to your book suggestions and review them. In fact, this book here was Variable Star, was a book that somebody asked for. I can't remember the name. I don't have the email out in front of me, but they said read this book and review it. So there, I have. And I enjoyed it very much. Thank you very much for that recommendation. Other people recommending Stephen Baxter and Ian M. Banks, although I have read all of Ian M. Banks' books before. I think I'm going to go back and try out the Use of Weapons book that he wrote, because when I was reading it the first time, I didn't quite understand everything that was going on there, the structure of the story all over the place. So I'm going to go back and see if I can get more out of that book. And other ideas of books to read in the future as well for myself. So, hope you've enjoyed this. Like I say, email me, luke@juggler.net. That's about it. Thank you very much. Bye.